Chapter 3, in which Charmaine works several spells at once. The bathroom was as reassuring as Great Uncle William's kindly voice. It had a worn green stone floor and a little window, at which fluttered a green net curtain, and it had all the fitments Charmaine knew from home, and home has nothing but the best, she thought. Better still, it had taps and the toilet flushed. True, the bath and the taps were strange, slightly bulbous shapes, as if the person who installed them had not been quite sure what he or she was aiming at. But the taps, when Charmaine experimentally turned them on, ran cold and hot water, just as they were supposed to, and there were warm towels on a rail under the mirror. "Perhaps I can put one of those laundry bags in the bath," Charmaine mused. "How would I squeeze it dry?" Across the corridor from the bathroom was a row of doors, stretching away into dim distance. Charmaine went to the nearest one and pushed it open, expecting it to lead to the living room, but there was a small bedroom beyond it instead. Obviously Great Uncle William's, to judge by the mess. The white covers trailed off the unmade bed, almost on top of several stripy nightshirts scattered over the floor. Shirts dangled out of drawers, along with socks, and what looked like long underclothes, and the open cupboard held a musty-smelling uniform of some kind. Under the window were two more sacks stuffed full of laundry. Charmaine groaned aloud. "I suppose he's been ill for quite a time," she said, trying to be charitable. "But mother of pearl, why do I have to deal with it all?" The bed started twitching. Charmaine jumped round to face it. The twitching was Waif, curled up comfortably in the mound of bedclothes, scratching for a flea. When he saw Charmaine looking at him, he wagged his flimsy tail and grovelled, lowered his frayed ears, and whispered a pleading whine at her. "You're not supposed to be there, are you?" she said to him. "All right. I can see you're comfortable, and I'm blowed if I'm sleeping in that bed anyway." She marched out of the room and opened the next door along. To her relief, there was another bedroom there, almost identical with Great Uncle William's, except that this one was tidy. The bed was clean and neatly made, the cupboard was shut, and when she looked, she found the drawers were empty. Charmaine nodded approval at the room and opened the next door along the corridor. There was another neat bedroom there, and beyond that another, each one exactly the same. "I'd better throw my things around the one that's mine, or I'll never find it again," she thought. She turned back into the corridor to find that Waif had come off the bed, and was now scratching at the bathroom door with both front paws. "You won't want to go in there," Charmaine told him. "None of it's any use to you." But the door came open somehow before Charmaine got to it. Beyond it was the kitchen. Waif trotted jauntily in there, and Charmaine groaned again. The mess had not gone away. There were the dirty crockery and the laundry bags, with the addition now of a teapot lying in a pool of tea, Charmaine's clothes in a heap near the table, and a large green bar of soap in the fireplace. "I'd forgotten all this," Charmaine said. Waif put both tiny front paws on the bottom rung of the chair, and raised himself to his full small length pleadingly. "You're hungry again," Charmaine diagnosed. "So am I." She sat in the chair, and Waif sat on her left foot, and they shared another pasty. Then they shared a fruit tart, two doughnuts, six chocolate biscuits, and a custard flan. After this, Waif plodded rather heavily away to the inner door, which opened for him as soon as he scratched at it. Charmaine gathered up her pile of clothes and followed him, meaning to put her things in the first empty bedroom. But here things went a trifle wrong. Charmaine pushed the door open with one elbow, and fairly naturally turned right to go into the corridor with the bedrooms in it. She found herself in complete darkness. Almost at once she walked into another door, where she hit her elbow on its doorknob with a clang. "Ouch!" she said, fumbled for the doorknob, and opened this door. It swung inward majestically. Charmaine walked into a large room lit by arched windows all around it and found herself breathing a damp, stuffy, leathery, neglected smell. The smell seemed to come from the elderly leather seats of carved chairs arranged around the big carved table that took up most of the room. Each seat had a leather mat on the table in front of it, and an old, withered sheet of blotting paper on the mat, except for the large seat at the other end that had the arms of High Norland carved into the back of it. This one had a fat little stick on the table instead of a mat. All of it, chairs, table and mats, was covered in dust, and there were cobwebs in the corners of the many windows. Charmaine stared. "Is this the dining room, or what?" she said. "How do I get to the bedrooms from here?" Great Uncle William's voice spoke, sounding quite faint and far off.
"You have reached the conference room," it said. "If you are there, you're rather lost, my dear, so listen carefully. Turn round once, clockwise, then, still turning clockwise, open the door with your left hand only. Go through and let the door shut behind you. Then take two long steps sideways to your left. This will bring you back beside the bathroom."
"And let's hope it does," Charmaine thought, doing her best to follow these directions. All went well, except for the moment of darkness after the door had swung shut behind her, when Charmaine found herself staring into a totally strange stone corridor. An old, bent man was pushing a trolley along it, loaded with steaming silver teapot, jugs and chafing dishes, and what looked like a pile of crumpets. She blinked a little, decided that she would not do any good either to herself or the old man by calling out to him, and took two long steps to the left instead. And then, to her relief, she was standing beside the bathroom, from where she could see Waif turning round and round on Great Uncle William's bed in order to get comfortable. "Phew," Charmaine said, and went and dumped the pile of clothes on top of the chest of drawers in the next bedroom along. After that, she went along the corridor to the open window at the end, where she spent some minutes staring out at that sloping sunlit meadow and breathing the fresh, chilly air that blew in from it. A person could easily climb out of this, she thought. Or in. But she was not really seeing the meadow or thinking of fresh air. Her real thoughts were with that enticing book of spells that she'd left open on Great Uncle William's desk. She had never in her life been let loose among magic like this. It was hard to resist. "I shall just open it at random and do the first spell I see," she thought. "Just one spell." In the study, the Book of Palimpsest was, for some reason, now open at "A Spell to Find Yourself a Handsome Prince." Charmaine shook her head and closed the book. "Who needs a prince?" she said. She opened the book again, carefully at a different place. This page was headed, "A Spell for Flying." "Oh, yes," Charmaine said. "That's much more like it." She put her glasses on and studied the list of ingredients. "A sheet of paper, a quill pen, easy, there's both on this desk, 1 egg, kitchen, 2 flower petal, one pink and the other blue, 6 drops of water, bathroom, 1 red hair, 1 white hair, and 2 pearl buttons. "No problem at all," Charmaine said. She took her glasses off and bustled about assembling ingredients. She hurried to the kitchen. She got to that by opening the bathroom door and turning left and was almost too excited to find that she had got this right and asked the air, "Where do I find eggs?" Great Uncle William's gentle voice replied,
"Eggs are in a crock in the pantry, my dear. I think it's behind the laundry bags. I do apologize for leaving you with such disorder."
Charmaine went into the pantry and leaned across the laundry bags, where sure enough she found an old pie dish with 6 brown eggs in it. She took one of them carefully back to the study. Since her glasses were dangling on their chain, she failed to notice that the Boke of Palimpsest was now open at a spell to find hidden treasure. She bustled over to the study window, where the flower petals were ready to hand on a hydrangea bush that was one half pink and the other blue. She laid those beside the egg and rushed to the bathroom, where she collected the 6 drops of water in a tooth mug. On the way back, she went across the passage to where Waif was now curled up like a meringue on Great Uncle William's blankets. "Excuse me," Charmaine said to him, and raked her fingers along his ragged white back. She came away with quite a number of white hairs, one of which she put beside the flower petals, and added to that a red hair from her own head. As for the pearl buttons, she simply ripped 2 of them off the front of her blouse. "Right," she said, and put her glasses eagerly on again to look at the instructions. The Boke of Palimpsest was now open at a spell for personal protection, but Charmaine was too excited to notice. She looked only at the instructions, which were in 5 stages. Stage 1 said, "Place all ingredients except quill and paper in a suitable bowl." Charmaine, after taking her glasses off to stare searchingly around the room and finding no bowl, suitable or not, was forced to go off to the kitchen again. While she was gone, lazily and slyly, the Boke of Palimpsest turned over another couple of pages. When Charmaine came back with a slightly sugary bowl, having tipped all the sugar out onto a not-too-dirty plate, the Boke was open at a spell to increase magical power. Charmaine did not notice. She put the bowl down on the desk and piled into it the egg, the 2 petals, the 2 hairs, and her 2 buttons, and dripped the water carefully in on top. Then she put her glasses on and leaned over the book to discover what she did next. By this time, the Boke of Palimpsest was displaying a spell to become invisible, but Charmaine only looked at the instructions and did not see this. Stage 2 told her to mash all ingredients together using only the pen. It's not easy to mash up an egg with a feather, but Charmaine managed it, stabbing with a sharpened end over and over until the shell fell to pieces, then stirring so hard that her hair fell down over her face in red strands, and finally, when nothing seemed to mix properly, whisking with the feather end. When she finally stood up, panting, and pushed her hair away with sticky fingers, the Boke had turned over yet another page. It now displayed a spell to start a fire. But Charmaine was too busy trying not to get egg on her glasses to see. She put them on and studied stage 3. Stage 3 of this spell said, "Recite 3 times, Hegemony Gouda." "Hegemony Gouda," Charmaine intoned obediently over the bowl. She was not sure, but on the 3rd repetition, she thought the bits of eggshell seethed around the pearl buttons a little. "I think it's working," she thought. She pushed her glasses back on her nose and looked at stage 4. By this time, she was looking at stage 4 in a spell to bend objects to the will. "Take up the quill," this said, "and using the prepared mixture, write upon the paper the word Ilf, surrounded by a 5-sided figure. Care must be taken not to touch the paper while doing this." Charmaine took up the drippy, sticky feather pen, adorned with bits of eggshell and a piece of pink petal, and did her best. The mixture was not easy to write with, and there seemed no way to hold the paper steady. It slipped and it slid, while Charmaine dipped and scratched, and the word that was supposed to be Ilf came out gluey and semi-visible and crooked and looked more like hoof, because the red hair in the bowl came out on the pen halfway through and did strange loopy things across the word. As for the 5-sided figure, the paper slipped sideways while Charmaine was trying to draw it, and the most that could be said for it was that it had 5 sides. It finished as a sinister egg-yolk yellow shape with a dog hair sticking off one corner. Charmaine heaved up a breath, plastered her hair back with a now extremely sticky hand, and looked at the final stage, stage five. It was now stage five of A Spell to Make a Wish Come True, but she was far too flustered to notice. It said, placing the feather back in the bowl, clap hands three times and say, tax. Tax, Charmaine said, clapping hard and stickily. Something evidently worked. The paper, the bowl, and the quill pen all vanished quietly and completely. So did most of the sticky trickles on Great Uncle William's desk. The bulk of palimpsest shut itself with a snap. Charmaine stood back, dusting crummy bits from her hands, feeling quite exhausted and rather let down. But I should be able to fly, she told herself. I wonder where the best place is to test it out. The answer was obvious. Charmaine went out of the study and along to the end of the passage, to where the window stood invitingly open to the sloping green meadow. The window had a broad, low sill, perfect for climbing over. In a matter of seconds, Charmaine was out in the meadow in the evening sunlight, breathing the cold, clean air of the mountains. She was right up in the mountains here, with most of High Norland spread out beneath her, already blue with evening. Opposite her, lit up orange by the low sun and deceivingly near, were the snowy peaks that separated her country from Strangia, Montalbino, and other foreign places. Behind her were more peaks where large dark grey and crimson clouds were crowding up ominously. It was going to rain up here soon, as it often did in High Norland, but for the moment it was warm and peaceful. There were sheep grazing in another meadow just beyond some rocks, and Charmaine could hear mooing and bells tonkling from a herd of cows somewhere quite near. When she looked that way, she was a trifle startled to find that the cows were in a meadow above her, and that there was no sign of Great Uncle William's house or the window she had climbed out of. Charmaine did not let this worry her. She had never been this high in the mountains before, and she was astonished at how beautiful it was. The grass she was standing on was greener than any she had seen in the town. Fresh scents blew off it. These came when she looked closely from hundreds and hundreds of tiny, exquisite flowers growing low in the grass. "Oh, Great Uncle William, you are lucky," she cried out. "Fancy having this next door to your study." For a while she wandered blissfully about, avoiding the bees that were busy among the flowers, and picking herself a bunch that was supposed to be one of each kind. She picked a tiny scarlet tulip, a white one, a starry golden flower, a pale pygmy primrose, a mauve harebell, a blue cup, an orange orchid, and one each from crowded clumps of pink and white and yellow. But the flowers that took her fancy most were tiny blue trumpets, more piercingly blue than any blue she could have imagined. Charmaine thought they might be gentians, and she picked more than one. They were so small, so perfect, and so blue. All the time she was wandering farther down the meadow, to where there seemed to be a drop-off of some kind. She thought she might jump off there and see if the spell had made her really able to fly. She reached the drop-off at the time when she found she had more flowers than she could hold. There were six new kinds at the rocky edge that she had to leave where they were. But then she forgot flowers and just stared. The meadow ended in a cliff half the mountain high. Way, way below her, beside the little thread of the road, she could see Great Uncle William's house like a tiny grey box in a smudge of garden. She could see other houses equally far off, scattered up and down the road, and lights coming on in them in tiny orange twinkles. They were so far below that Charmaine gulped and her knees shook slightly. "I think I'll give up flying practice for the moment," she said. "But how do I get down?" asked a subdued inner thought. "Don't let's think about that now," another inner thought replied firmly. Let's just enjoy the view. She could see most of High Norland from up here, after all. Beyond Great Uncle William's house, the valley narrowed into a green saddle glinting with white waterfalls, where the pass led up into Montalbino, the other way past the bulge of mountain where the meadow was. The thread of road joined the more winding thread of the river, and both plunged in among the roofs, towers, and turrets of High Norland City. Lights were coming on there, too, but Charmaine could still see the soft shining of the famous golden roof on the royal mansion, with the flicker of the flag above it. And she thought she could even pick out her parents' house beyond it. None of it was very far away. Charmaine was quite surprised to see that Great-Uncle William really lived only just outside the town. Behind the town, the valley opened out. It was lighter there, out of the shadow of the mountains, melting into twilight distance with orange pricks of lights in it. Charmaine could see the long, important shape of Castle Joie, where the Crown Prince lived, and another castle she did not know about. This one was tall and dark, with smoke drifting from one of its turrets. Behind it, the land faded into bluer distance, full of farms, villages, and industries that formed the heart of the country. Charmaine could actually see the sea, misty and faint beyond that. "We're not a very big country, are we?" she thought. But this thought was interrupted by a sharp buzzing from the bunch of flowers she held. She held the bunch up to see what was making the noise. Up here in the meadow, the sun was still quite dazzlingly bright, bright enough for Charmaine to see that one of her blue, trumpet-shaped, probably gentians, was shaking and vibrating as it buzzed. She must have picked one with a bee in it by mistake. Charmaine held the flowers downward and shook them. Something purple and whirring fell out into the grass by her feet. It was not exactly bee-shaped, and instead of flying away as a bee would, it sat in the grass and buzzed. As it buzzed, it grew. Charmaine took a nervous sideways step from it along the edge of the cliff. It was bigger than Waif already and still growing. "I don't like this," she thought. "What is it?" Before she could move or even think again, the creature shot up to twice the height of a person. It was dark purple and man-shaped, but it was not a man. It had small see-through purple wings on its back that were blurred and whirring with motion, and its face was... Charmaine had to look away. Its face was the face of an insect, with groping bits and feeler bits, antennae, and bulging eyes that had at least 16 smaller eyes inside them. "Oh, heavens," Charmaine whispered. "I think the thing's a lubbock."
"I am the lubbock," the creature announced. Its voice was a mixture of buzz and snarl. "I am the lubbock, and I own this land."
Charmaine had heard of lubbocks. People at school had whispered of lubbocks, and none of it was pleasant. The only thing to do, so they said, was to be very polite and hope to get away without being stung and then eaten. "I'm very sorry," Charmaine said. "I didn't realize I was trespassing in your meadow."
"You are trespassing wherever you tread," the lubbock snarled. "All the land you can see is mine."
"What? All of High Norland?" Charmaine said.
"Don't talk nonsense." "I never talk nonsense," the creature said. "All is mine. You are mine."
Wings whirring, it began to stalk toward her on most unnatural-looking wiry blobs of feet.
"I shall come to claim my own very soon now. I claim you first."
It took a whirring stride toward Charmaine. Its arms came out. So did a pronged sting on the lower part of its face. Charmaine screamed, dodged, and fell off the edge, scattering flowers as she fell.